On Deck Radio, wall-to-wall baseball talk. With Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman.
The Twins are going to win the World Series. The Twins have won it.
Covering the diamond like the world's biggest rain tarp, Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman. On Deck Radio with 105 The Ticket.
Base hit left field. Dozier to third. They're going to wave him around. Colabello's throw comes through, and the Twins get an RBI single from Joe Mauer. To center and hit well. Millar back. Still back. Still back. Off the fence. Robinson will score. Mauer will be held. Up the middle. It hits Burley. And a run will score. A rocket right up the box. And Burley took one somewhere around the ankle. It'll be an infield hit and an RBI for Suzuki.
And missing on that little display was the Chris Colabello shot into left field off of Glenn Perkins after a walk, which would be the margin in that game.
We talk about the positive first before we bring up the negative.
It felt really good until, you get the early runs. We're going to talk about that as a theme. Joining us from the office is the skipper, Al Newman.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Man, I miss you.
It's weird not having you in here. It's been too long.
You guys sound so fresh.
The question is, Newman, you fresh after starting your season?
Well, I'm 0-2 right now.
Oh.
0-2. Hey, home opener, we got blasted. hoping it didn't go against the scroll line in the Twins game, and I said thank you when I didn't see it. But we sat in Rochester for 6 hours and then got the rain delayed and canceled.
And you said thank God.
Yes, I said thank you. I needed a day's rest, and now I'm on with my buddies.
Did they bring you? Did they bring you out in a limo for opening night, Al?
Well, they brought me in what they call Newmy's new ride. Newmy's new ride, and it was a nice truck, and it was a fun time. You know, it's good to get the season underway. I'll be glad when I get the majority of my ball players. They're finishing up. You know, when they get knocked off, they can come play for me. And I do need them.
So let's talk about that for a minute. Obviously, you are in the Northwoods League with Alexandria, and this is a team that's comprised of college players who play summer ball. Most college coaches want these players to play in these leagues through the summer to develop their games. And Northwoods League is known as one of the bigger leagues in the summer collegiate world. It's a whole world that is out there that I don't think fans in the Minnesota metro area know much about. But what happens is you have to have players on short-term loan, if you will, until your actual players get there who are completing their summer playoffs, conference playoffs, and then maybe even the College World Series.
Oh, for sure. You know, this is when some of the D2, D3 players and some junior college players are able to play in the Northwoods League or get a summer playing position for about, 15 days, a month. I know I left 3 slots for my, I have 10 temporary players as they're called, and I left 3 open slots, so if they perform well, they do have an opportunity to stay for the summer and possibly, be seen by scouts throughout the summer, and then they do have an all-star and a 100 prospect game. So these guys are trying to get on the map, and I look forward to being a mentor or teacher of the game. It's fun to see their eyes and their ears and everything just open up and try to be receptive to what you're teaching.
Where and how do you get your guys? Where do they come from and how do you get them?
Well, Adam Barta, one of the owners, secures the most of the guys, or he'll give me the names and I'll look them up and maybe talk to the college coaches. Some of them I brought back from last year, but they come from all around the country. I've got kids coming in from California and Florida, Georgia. And, sometimes when you go after the D1 players and their teams make the playoffs, you become on the short end. I'm missing 12 guys right now.
Wow.
So what you're saying is there will really be no excuse once these guys get back because they're playoff-style players you're dealing with.
I bring it on. I'm trying to win this year. You want to win, but you also have to develop the player. These guys didn't come here to sit on the bench the whole summer. And I remember as a player, I was a backup player, and you wanted to get playing time. So I try to win under the guise of playing my whole team and just developing a rotation. Sort of like what the Twins are doing now. You know, Molly's getting everybody in there. He had to make a hard cut and sending down Vargas. And it seemed to open up the offense a little bit with the rotation of that DH spot. So it's sort of like that time trying to prep them as if, hey, let's find a way to make you better when you go back to your college.
I see you have my boy Ryan Fromm, the sophomore 6'3 starter on your roster. Is he with you yet?
Yeah, Mr. Fromm just decided he was going to come. he's one of those guys that I've been waiting on. You know, but he's a good guy. He was here last year. I thought he got better in the league. That's why I asked him to come back. And I've got Fromm starting a game for me possibly on Monday after throwing a bullpen today.
How many pitchers do you carry on your roster, Alex? I know you guys are very similar to a professional ball when you play almost every day with a few days off the whole summer.
Yeah, we can carry up to 16 at this point. And then there's a date in June where you have to get down to 14 and declare. I had a pitcher hit a home run against us the other day down in Rochester, so he'll have to decide if he's going to be a hitter or a pitcher. Matt Fiedler with the U came in to close the game the other day. He started in center and then pitched, so you can carry that type of player up until about the middle of June, and then they have to declare, and you can carry 14. You have to have 14 pitchers because there are quite a few pitch limitations. If you throw 85, if you throw 30 in an inning, you got to be taken out of the game. You know, 2 days in a row, you get a day off. 100 pitches or 85 to 100, the starter must have 5 complete days off. So you've got to carry quite a few.
And in this league, there's 18 teams. From Minnesota, you got the Rochester Honkers, the St. Cloud Rocks, the Duluth Huskies. You have the Wilmer Stingers and the Alexandria Blue Anchors, along with the South Division that really, to me, looks like it's more of an East Division as you go into Wisconsin and Michigan. So there's a lot of great baseball that goes beyond just your 13 AAA tournament down at Braemar at the Edina Classic, Gene.
So, Al, what about the kids' living conditions in Alexandria and the other cities in the Northwoods League? Do they have families that provide meals and a room and board type situation for them?
Well, most definitely, Gino, they definitely do. There are host families that we couldn't do this without. You know, the kids stay, the young men stay with host families. They do feed them. The team also feeds them lunch and dinner. But, you know, they'll eat the host families out of house and home before the summer's over, I'm sure. There's probably a lot of barbecues and hot dogs, Gino.
Love it.
Yes, I know. I grew up on that. I did it 3 times in college, and it was a lot of fun. But I think the tough part for these guys is just getting used to the daily routine of coming to the park and playing. I've got guys already shaking their shoulders because I threw them one day, gave them a day off, and threw them again. They're not used to the workload, so it's definitely a necessity at the start of the season to have enough pitching.
So, like, for a 7 o'clock start, Al, what time would you like your guys to show up at the field, or is there various times for based on their position?
Well, the starter is the only guy that I let come 1 hour before the game. The rest of the guys that are for a 7 o'clock game, I have them at the ballpark at 2 o'clock.
Wow.
I might have a fundamental. You know, when you're dealing with guys from all over the country, you got to try to make it a team. So we've got to go over some type of situation at that time for about 15, 20 minutes. Then we get into extra hitting, fielding, or whatever you need to do before we actually start our BP at 3:30. So an hour and a half of fundamentals, go into batting practice. Then you get about an hour and 15 before the game starts. So it's a full day. Plus, they're the grounds crew. We don't hire grounds crew. I drag the field before and in between batting practice before the game because I really like to take care of the infield, make sure there's no bad hop for us, you know. You know, I don't want any excuses talking about a bad hop. You know, when you got good hands, you should be able to catch it. So I prep the field. The pitchers do the mounds. Catchers got home plate. And the outfielders bring out the batter's eye and all the screens. So, man, I tell you what, it is a summer job for them, but they're just not being paid once again.
And I think a lot of people, the majority of fans who are not, you know, full-time baseball fans, especially at the amateur level, don't realize how much work these kids put in before the game starts. I think some of these people think, well, it's like Little League travel ball where you're going to get 10 swings in a cage before the game and let's start playing. And like you said, they're here at 3 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game. That's a long time before to prepare for just, you know, the four at-bats or the game starting pitcher.
Most definitely, Gino, and both you and I know it. I'm trying to explain to these young men that you have to put in the time. If you're going to climb the ladder, you've got to differentiate yourself from the next guy, although you're his teammate and you've got to root for him and you should root for him. So you got to put the time in to accomplish success. It just amazes me, Gino. You talk about little leaguers and high school guys. I'm sure certain you should go season to season if you're multi-athletic. I suggest play other sports, but at the same time, when it comes tryout time, how busy is your facility a week before? Because kids think that they can put in just a week worth of practice and make a ball club. You've got to dedicate a little more time, and that's what these college guys are doing by giving up their summer.
Yeah, and you said the thing earlier in this conversation that I repeat to the younger guys, too. You're competing against your teammates for playing time. Yeah, the camaraderie for a team is essential to have fun, but you're also competing with your guy in practice to show the coach that you are better than him to play a particular position or play a particular tournament. You know, you just got to go, you can't just go out in your business. You got to prepare like you're competing in a game in practice. Simulate what would happen in a game in practice, and that's how you get better.
Yes, and you know, so much so that that's how you slow the game down.
Correct.
You slow the game down by practicing as if it's game-like conditions without the pressure, and that's the only way you're going to get better and stay on the field as far as making the plays and the proper decisions. It's a tremendous pleasure for me to watch the guys get better, to ask quality questions. But you always have a couple of guys on your team that stand out a little more than others in certain ways. And from day one, there's always one that's a thorn in your side.
This is On Deck Radio. Gene Larkin in studio with Pete Wagner and, of course, Al Newman out working with the Alexandria. What are you, the Blizzard? What are you guys called again?
The Blue Anchors.
Oh, the Blue Anchors.
And right now we're 0-2, so we're at the bottom.
Okay, there you go. I see 0-3 on your standings. I think you might have missed one there.
Yes, I left an opening for you, but you
can
take it.
I just dove right in. Well, so which sends me to this. Gene, at the Legion level, do you tend to try to prepare some of these kids who, not all of them are, but who some of, if they go on to the next level, to understand what the regiment means of being prepared and being at the park early, and it's more than just a couple of swings, and you know, it's maybe from a 3 to 9, 10 o'clock type of deal.
Well, I'm not going to get the kids there that early at the Legion level, but I do preach to them that they need to be prepared for practice just like they want to be prepared for a game, because to me, I treat practice like a game simulated thing. Like the pace of play in practice, I want the same pace. Ground ball to shortstop, I want him to simulate in his mind that there's a guy running down to first base.
Sure.
To beat the throw. So like Al says, and I think it's perfect at any age, but specifically at the high school, college level, when you're trying to improve and reach your potential. That's what we want every one of our guys that we work with to reach their potential, whether that's a Division III guy or whether
sure.
it's a guy that's not going to play college
sure.
baseball,
sure.
his potential in high school. And you just show them what it's going to take to get you to that sport where, you know what, you can look yourself in the mirror every day. I gave everything. I want my guys to be exhausted after practice,
sure.
mentally and physically exhausted, that they gave everything for that 2 to 3 hour time frame.
Exactly.
You know,
the length of a game.
Forget about the problems that you've got in the real world. For those 2 or 3 hours, treat it like, you know, I'm away from the real world and I'm going to be really passionate about these 2 or 3 hours and get intense and try to get better.
To the point of bringing players to their full potential, Al, I wanted to kind of turn our attention. We'll get into the Twins a little bit more.
Sure.
I'm going to give you this question, and then when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about it, because we've got about a minute left in this segment. But you know, Danny Santana, obviously, has been working a lot with Gene Glynn on his ground balls. I was reported in the Pioneer Press. Mike Berardino wrote a nice little bit about that. And one of the things that I couldn't help but notice was that how his lower half has slowed down a lot.
Yep.
And he's throwing BBs and strikes over to first, like right at the letters. Last night was really a great example of that. I want to talk more about not only just what, you know, not mechanics as much, but but how much those repetitions matter, and from a coaching and a player development perspective, how important that is. We take a timeout. Al, we'll come back out of the break with that with you. This is On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
There, everybody. You know, what's going on with that Gene Larkin character, huh? I mean, come on. He tries to say he's from New York and he's coming at you with all the yas and the
new pictures
and stuff. Come on. Hey, Gene, what do you say, kid? Huh?
Is that Bill Hanley?
I love it. Love it.
I saw him this morning, and I stuffed the phone right in front of the grill.
He's great.
How good is that?
That's really good. Wow.
Oh, God. You know, he even goes into... Yeah. So when you ask him to do this, guys, I said, you got to take a shot at Gene. He goes, well, what am I going to say? I go, just figure it out. Just take a shot at him. He goes, okay, hang on. And he takes a breath. He looks around. But the great part is Billy goes into the full hairy head bob.
Oh.
I mean, he goes like into... It's like his eyes roll the back of his head.
He
goes into full character. Great man.
Works hard.
You know what? He's got some of the best well-kept fields in the state of Minnesota at Braemar. And I'm not saying that because I know he's listening in the shed right now. I'm saying it because it's the truth.
A lot of teams come in to play down the terminus just for the field and the atmosphere that Braemar provides. And Billy and his staff
do a tremendous job
taking care of those fields all summer.
He's all about the detail. No question. So Billy and the guys, great work.
Thank you, Billy.
It's phenomenal stuff. So we might hear back from him later in the show, too. So stay tuned.
Love it.
I just got to give a little teaser there. So back on the question before, Al, I was asking about Danny Santana and the work he's taking and the things that he's working with Gene Glynn on. And it sounded to me like he wanted to slow down his thought process just a little bit.
Well, you know, that's funny. Not funny, but I commend Gene Glynn. As you know, and maybe Gino may have heard me say this before, Gino was my first roommate in the minor leagues. And as an infielder, he was a
lot of skeletons now. A lot of skeletons.
Yeah, a lot of skeletons.
Now we know where to go.
Well, as far as the fielding goes, he was a little bit older than I. And he used to talk to me about infield play in the professional game. He's been around the game under some of the best managers in all of baseball, especially Felipe Alou. He was his third base coach and right-hand man. But when you talk about slowing the game down, Gino is very good at teaching that. And I had on my notes before you even brought it up, I was going to talk about Santana and how he seems to have made a better transition. And as I try to teach infielders, and Gino can attest to this, you read a ground ball with your eyes. Obviously, you see the ball. But a lot of young fielders tend to run over to the ball and then figure out how they're going to catch it. Slowing the game down is moving your feet in according to what your eyes are saying. The hop that you're reading, the type of spin, the type of footwork necessary to square up and throw. So your eyes are going to tell you a lot of information, but if you slow it down, you can actually read what the hops are telling you. And I think that's what Santana's doing better than anything. When you read a ground ball properly, your hands are in good fielding position, and so are your feet.
Yeah, Al, the way I teach infield and watching you play for a number of years from all the facets, whether it's third, short, or second, you field the ball with your glove, but your feet put your glove in the proper fielding position.
Yes, sir.
So if you have good feet, I mean, I always say this, doesn't matter how big and slow you are on the bases, you could have a big guy with good, quick feet and be a very good infielder. Then you got a short, quick guy who can't get his feet in proper position and he's not very good. They say he's got stone hands.
Yeah.
Well, the reason why kids have stone hands versus soft hands, their feet never get their glove in the proper fielding position. So they work on their hands all the time and they neglect their foot. Their feet and their footwork. And the more footwork you work on, the more agility drills you do as a young player, your glove will get in the proper position more consistently.
You're amazing, man, because I try to call myself the foot doctor. And that's where it is. Fielding is in your feet, reading with your eyes. And, man, that is so important. That's awesome, Gino, that you brought that up because a lot of guys don't understand what you mean. And until you can slow them down, they always want to be so fast with their hands. Everything's in a hurry. You got quick hands, you got feet that are out of control.
And I wonder if you agree with this too, Al. And I mean, we talk about a lot of throwing errors, especially from shortstop and third base. I always preach the majority of throwing errors is not because of poor arm strength or arm angles. It's because of poor footwork.
Exactly.
If you get better footwork, you'll reduce your number of throwing errors.
Oh, for sure. And you know, we used to hear Tom Kelly all the time say, play catch.
Right.
You know, you fielded this guy first team to 27 outs. And more importantly, a drill that Tom Kelly came up with in 87 that I still use everywhere I go. Good morning, America. It slows it down, forces you to be under control with quality footwork to get your arm in the proper throwing position, just like a pitcher. He's got to be out over his front foot in a line to where he's trying to throw the ball. So do baseball players and fielders when they're taking ground balls. So game-like conditions with proper tutelage, you can have a quality infielder. And I think that's what Gene Glenn is doing with Santana.
Well, you can see the results of it. It's been impressive. Everything's together, and he's throwing. I always tell the 11-year-olds, little ones, your feet are your steering wheel. If you don't have that, you can't drive the car. So it starts from there, and that really directs the whole thing to where you need to go.
How about this one, Gino? How about this one? Guys with heavy feet.
Right.
The elephant feet guys, if some of the listeners are out there and they take ground balls after another guy and the dirt's all splattered all over the place, it's because he's got heavy feet and he's out of control.
And I tell young coaches, you do not want to see an 11-year-old designated hitter. You really don't. You want to really work on the young people's foot and footwork all the time when you do your defensive drills. We always work about throwing arm. We'll work on the feet the majority of the time, and everything else will take care of itself.
Man, balance, rhythm, tempo.
Yep.
And it's all established by your feet, and it's amazing. When you teach it that way, guys tend to get better over a period of time.
Look at this. We're solving all the world's problems here in the baseball world. This is phenomenal stuff. Let's take a look quick at the Twins. Obviously, they've been playing very good baseball. They entered the series with the Toronto Blue Jays, tied for first at the time with the Kansas City Royals. The Detroit Tigers in the rearview mirror a little bit anyway. And things kind of changed after Chris Colabello's home run yesterday. The former Twin went down and got one a little bit from Glenn Perkins and deposited into the left field seats. Five runs scored on home runs from Toronto. We know they're about that. Paul Molitor talked about the big swing and then how things kind of fell into the favor of the Blue Jays.
He crushed that ball. You know, it was one of those games, a little frustrating for us to lose a game when you get four in the first inning off a guy like that. As we know that he can, obviously, settle in and, complete game after that start. That's pretty impressive by him. And, Trevor was struggling a little bit, got behind a lot of guys, threw a lot of pitches. Seemed like he threw his best pitches when he got the three-ball counts. But, they got five runs on two swings, and we just couldn't find a way to add on to our initial lead. So, as far as Glenn's concerned, he comes in a tie game. He hasn't had to do that much, and made some close pitches to Martin there, but the leadoff walk, and then Chris got that fastball kind of down where he could handle it and put it in the bullpen.
Difference of the game right there. Gene, I know you were busy watching your Rangers fall in Game 7, and so you didn't get to see
put the dagger in deeper.
Well, I was waiting. I was thinking maybe you thought that I was going to let it go, but I'm obviously not going to do that, right, Al? I mean, we're all over that.
I thought of Gino and George Samus.
I'm switching back and forth between the Twins and Rangers, and it started off good on the Twins side. I mean, the four in the front spot there was awesome, and Mahler talked about letting him off the hook a little bit. Well, you get four runs, you expect to win the game, especially the way this team has been pitching and playing, and Trevor May didn't have it. He threw a lot of, like Paul said, a lot of three-ball counts, threw a lot of pitches early in the counts in the game, and you should win the game, especially when you score four early. He doesn't usually give up four the whole game. He gives up four, and then he just totally settled down. And Dick and Bert kept saying, he's throwing an 83-mile-an-hour fastball, an 80-mile-an-hour changeup. It's a typical lefty game, keep the ball away from the right-handed hitters. In the beginning of the game, in the first inning, you left the ball out over the plate for Dozier and Hunter. After that, not too much on the inside part of the plate.
You know, guys, it's so funny. I was just talking to my pitchers yesterday afternoon before we went to the ballpark in a conference room, and I mentioned Burley because I knew he was throwing against the Twins, and I said, how do you think this guy has stayed in the league throwing no harder at his top of his career, 89, 90, and now he's 83 to 87 miles an hour. I said because his fastball is four different pitches, up, down, in, and out, and he uses the changeup. And it's effectively used. He never gets himself out of count. And so that's the mastery of pitching. It's not how hard you throw. It's how can you command your fastball with the mix of a change. And when you throw the off speed, then the hitters are so concerned about being pushed forward and pulled back that you can get away with a breaking ball miss here and there.
And I love the pace of play when he pitches. Regardless if there's a guy on base or not, he's got the same rhythm. He gets the ball back from the catcher, gets the sign, and lets it go. There's no thinking, really. He just goes get the ball and throw it, and that changes
the hitter's game plan because he's so different from every other pitcher in the league,
right,
as far as time in between pitches. So he's got his routine down pretty good. He pitched a heck of a game. Unfortunately, Perkins gets hurt on a pitch that was a quality pitch, but to a guy who likes the ball down in the strike zone, and he took it out of the yard.
Well, and back to the pace of play, we know Burley works very fast, and Trevor May likes to work fast, but it kind of felt as to me as though he was maybe working quicker than he wanted to, did May, and maybe was out of his comfort zone a little bit.
I think that's a little bit of inexperience. Like Al said, Burley's been pitching forever at the same pace, regardless of whether he's pitching well a particular inning. Trevor May's still trying to find that rhythm.
It felt like he was trying to go there,
when
though.
Yeah, I agree. When things are going good, he's got a specific pace. Maybe he takes a deep breath too much when things aren't going well, and that's part of his adjustment of facing big league hitters. But, you know, he fought through it. He didn't pitch a terrible ball game. He kept the team in the game through six innings. Had too many three-ball counts, like Molitor said, but, you know, he tried hard.
Hey, you know, Gino, the thing about a guy like Burley, you say get him early. Okay, the Twins scored four runs early. They're feeling pretty good. They fell into the Burley trap because it looked like he was going to be hittable after that first inning, and then he uses that against you. And that's part of his maturity. That's part of him knowing what he can and can't do. Early in the game, guys like him take a little bit of time on occasion to get their feel for miles per hour differential. And once he figures it out, that's why you got to get him early. He lasted throughout the game.
He did indeed. We take a timeout. Five questions with Al Newman and Gene Larkin. On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
About a big shout out to Nick Kennedy. Yeah, Kennedy. He's out there in, I don't know, Cedar Simon, Iowa, or wherever on the other side. But hey, what do you say, Nick?
Fabulous.
Oh, man. So Harry's going to probably say hello to a lot of our listeners throughout the course of this program. Al Newman, you're not safe. I just couldn't burn it all on one show. So I'm sure Harry's going to be saying hello to you, too.
Well, that's fine. That's good. He did give me some advice my first television broadcast. He said, just have a Budweiser.
Oh, speaking of that, let's get into just what the doctor ordered, because you guys are the baseball doctors. I've got five questions for the two of you. You guys ready?
Ready.
Yeah.
Okay, number one. Who wants to start this one?
What's
go
the
ahead,
topic?
I think I'm going to go with Numi first on this
okay.
one.
Okay.
Just looks
you don't
over
think
it.
I can handle this?
Yeah,
topic?
I think this is too much pressure. I'm just looking for Gino to clean it up here. A little mop-up time.
Okay.
Okay, number one. Why do the Twins score runs in a flurry early, right, and then go quietly the rest of the game? And this has been kind of a theme here. They might have 5 to 7 hits in the first inning or two, score to 4 to 6 runs, and you know that's about it. And clubs hang around. They've been winning those games, and you know Paul Molitor acknowledged that after the game, is saying, "Yeah, it is something we've talked about." Is this an issue, or what happens with the fast start, and why is it so hard to contain?
Well, I mentioned it a little bit earlier with the guy like Burley. You know, you've got to get him, and so therefore your focus is sharp. You're more keen with tendencies of particular pitchers early in the game. And then when you get a big score or you put up a crooked number, on occasion, hitters, we have a tendency to not think it's easy, but give away at bats because our swings get too big. We get outside the game plan. And once guys who are a little more established, they take advantage of those things. But then as hitters, you don't face the at-bat or you don't approach the at-bat with the same, I'm not saying you're giving them away, but that's what it looks like. You're more aggressive instead of getting pitches you can handle.
Well, I'll say this. If we got 4 to 6 runs early in the game, we should win those games.
That game should be won yesterday.
That should be won. Also, I think if you knock a guy out with 4 or 6 runs in the first 3 innings, you're going to get a relief pitcher or two in there, totally different pitcher. So you have to make an adjustment to the relief pitcher. So I think everything's about an adjustment during the game. A hitter makes adjustments to the pitcher, whether he stays in the game or not, or if a relief pitcher comes in, and pitchers make adjustments to the hitter. Everybody's got a game plan in the first inning. Everybody knows what the pitcher's strengths and weaknesses are, and the pitcher knows the hitter's strengths and weaknesses. And then from that point on, after the first at bat, is what the pitcher's throwing well, what he feels good about. Al brings up velocity, changing speeds on your fastball. Does he make that adjustment? Does the hitter have to now make another adjustment to his adjustment?
It is an odd pattern. I mean, I don't know if I've recalled watching this as a viewer of baseball my entire life where it's gone on for 2 or 3 weeks. Is this final question to that first question? It's not the second. Is this something that can be, is this just a 182 game schedule thing that's overcome, Gene?
Yeah, I think it evens out. I think you're going to find throughout the season where you can't score until late innings, and then you go into a little bit of a funk as an offensive team. But right now, they're swinging early and getting a lot of big hits early in the game. And again, 4 to 6 runs, if you get 4 to 6 runs a game, you're going to be in the playoffs.
Right. So, and so many times, guys, pitchers don't have their arsenal the first 2 or 3 innings, regardless of who he is. He's got a fine touch feel with the breaking pitches, and a lot of times pitchers throw more fastballs that first inning just trying to establish the strike zone with the umpire.
Okay, question number 2, guys. Replay has been brought back into baseball or brought to baseball, and I have had this view from what I've seen. I think umpires are leaning back on that more than they ever have. If I remember, every time we've looked at a close play back in the day, they got it right. Almost every time. Almost. At least that's what I recall. Is replay a good thing or a bad thing, in your opinion? And is it allowed the umpires to sit back and rely on it, Gene?
No, I don't think they're relying on it. I think they're very good at what they do. I like it. I like to have the call right every time if we can through video replay.
Gino, I'd have got so many more hits.
Oh, wow. 300 hitters.
You know, that bang, bang, your bench players, you don't get that benefit of the doubt.
It eliminates the confrontation with the umpire.
You don't have that anymore.
So that used to screw up the time and the pace of the game, obviously. It's not as interesting from a fan's perspective when you had the old Earl Weaver kicking the dirt, throwing his hat, Lou Piniella. You don't get any of that anymore. So I like replay. I think it works as long as you can keep it to about a minute or a minute and a half where you evaluate the replay.
Al?
Well, Gino just made me envision a minor league game I was involved in one time. And the guy was going to get tossed out of the game. He comes storming out of the dugout running towards second because the umpire had caught a kid safe. And he did a pop-up slide and was right in the umpire's face. I couldn't believe what I had just seen. He got tossed, obviously, but that was the best I ever seen, and that was in the minor leagues. But for me, I like replay. I do like it. There are times when I think too many angles are shown in the sense that it takes too long. I just wish the red button would come on and somebody makes a decision that's sitting there in New York.
So it's fair to say, Al, you like the process. You'd like to see it tightened up a little bit. Gene, you like the idea that it gets the call right. And
I think it puts some pressure on the guy for each team.
You're not sold though on my question of it seems like there are more calls that were sure outs. One other thing. What is this back of the glove stuff? So you know the bang bang plays at first base. It's not if the glove is closed and controlled on the ball, it's if it hits the palm of the hand, correct?
Well, the umpire is listening to the pop of the glove is typically, and he's obviously glancing down at the base for the foot touching the base. So, but getting back to you about as far as putting the umpires in a laid back position, I think they're embarrassed a little bit.
Sure,
if
I
they
agree.
Made the call and it was turned because of video replay, so I don't think they fall back.
That's
on
a fair statement.
So I think they want to get the call right. So when it is replayed and they say the call was right, I think it feels like push your chest out a little bit. I was right. Don't even do that to me again. That type
There's only one guy that I see that totally cherishes when he's right. And you know who he is. He's the big general. Can you figure out who that is, Gino?
Oh, I got his face. Oh, he's Cowboy singing, Joe West?
Yes. Cowboy. Yeah.
I can't believe Cowboy Joe West is still rumbling out there. Oh,
he
my
loves,
word.
He loves confrontation.
Oh, yes,
doesn't
he
though? Why is that?
Because he's cowboy.
Yes.
Does he laugh at you
he's
in the confrontation?
Cowboy.
You don't have enough dirt under your cleats, Gene. Yeah. I get it, cowboy. Okay. I get it.
Yeah. That's so good. Okay, question number three. Al, who, in your opinion, from, let's say, 1975 on, is the best hitter in Major League Baseball? Pure hitter.
The best pure hitter from the time that I saw? I'm going to have to go with my college teammate, Tony Gwynn.
Oh, that was mine.
I gotta go. I seen that one in college, and for what he did in the major leagues, I have to go with him because of longevity. I just like Tony's approach. He was a pioneer, with the video. I'm not saying other guys didn't do it, but I recall Tony filming having his fiance, now wife, when he was alive, filming him while we were playing college ball, and that was just so weird to see back in that time.
Gene?
The best overall hitter?
Yeah, overall.
I think he was
going
to say Al Newman if he wanted a guy
with two-strike. Thank you, buddy. Thank you.
Oh, I mean, I grew up in New York, and there was a time there where Donnie Mattingly, to me, was the best hitter in the game for the short period, like 7 or 8 straight years. He was the guy that just dominated, and then Wade Boggs at the same time.
Sure.
So it's hard to give out one award as the best hitter.
But the name that if you were the name that came out to you out of your box is Don Mattingly.
Yeah, I love the way you hit. I just love the way you hit.
I can't argue with both. For me, I thought of Tony Gwynn out of the shoot too. I guess what brought it up is when they had the piece on FSN about Oliva Carew Maurer.
Good. Very well
Did
done.
You see Joe Maurer as a 2-year-old? Oh my God! Have you seen that, Al?
No, I have not.
Oh my God! He just like the swing was there. It was ridiculous.
Lefties have beautiful swings compared to righties.
But he was two. It was incredible.
I get it.
It was incredible.
He had good balance.
It was insane. But for me, watching.
His diaper wasn't wet either.
His approach with the flat, it probably was. That's why he was lugging it down to two. But the thing that.
The quick swing at two?
The quick swing. Oh,
yeah,
my word.
The,
of course, the hitting device, for those of you that want to know, Gene Larkin going right down that road. But the other hitter, I was just going to mention Rod Carew. Growing up in this area, you know, he had kind of that unconventional approach.
Stance, yeah.
Yeah, he was sort of leaning back and his knee was bowed one way. Yeah, toward the catcher. It hit the bat was flat. It just didn't make any sense. But I'll tell you what, that guy could put the ball anywhere, no matter where it was pitched.
As they say, get the barrel to the ball.
Oh, it was,
and that's what Carew was good at.
It was
gorgeous. Common denominator for all those guys, they were great 2-strike hitters. Yes. It didn't really matter if you got 2 strikes. The same approach. Take the barrel to the ball, like Al said, hit line drives all over the field.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to see him hit as a almost the flirting with 400 season, which was just legendary. Okay, guys, we've gone on 5 questions. We never really get to all 5. here's one good one for you guys. Gene, how well do you think your American Legion Edina team will fare this summer? Come on,
hey, it's about pitching and defense.
Yes, it is.
And executing your pitches as a pitcher and catching the ball when the ball's hit to you.
So how do you think they'll fare?
We're going to do fine. We'll be competitive. You know, if we execute better than most teams, we're going to win more games. If we don't, we're going to be under 500.
Al, how about you?
That's what I'm preaching up here. You've got to play defense. You got to throw strikes. And if we can do those things offensively, you can scrape a couple of runs across as long as you can try to hold the other team.
Well, I'm yawning because it sounds like Tom Kelly just entered the room, and I got a couple of cigars for you to lead your ball club into the field with.
We won under Tom Kelly, my friend.
No questions asked. I had to go there.
Yes.
Well, when we come back, we'll have more. This is On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. The Minnesota Twins working the worst of first, at least dreams here for the first 2 months. You have to really like that and appreciate that. This ball club's been playing some great baseball. They fell last night to the Toronto Blue Jays, but all they've done is win series. They sweep the Boston Red Sox. They come back from a 5-1 road trip that ran them through Pittsburgh and Chicago, and here they are now. This is the type of team, guys, that's had a short-term memory.
And you can't say anything negative about this team. I mentioned this last week. I love watching them play. I really do. It's been a long time since I've had the ability to say that the last few years, not wanting to go to Target Field or watch them on TV. I enjoy watching them play, and I think Molitor's got them playing the correct way, obviously. Wins take care of themselves when you execute on the field. In all facets of the game, they're doing a very good job.
Yeah, you know, I wrote down here, I said the Molitor factor. And I just think of some of the things that are taking place. And, you know, I kind of like the comical on occasion. You know, the big hitter of the day gets to dance in the locker room, right. You know. Gino, I was thinking we'd really had a blast in our locker room.
Gosh.
We were able to put smoke and throw some lights.
If you saw what Gene was doing in here, if you smoke and throw
light. Play day games after night games, not to say any names, but that could have been a problem. But it was a lot of fun. I think Molly's done a tremendous job. I think the you know, you say chemistry, the competitive nature of the roster, I think they're just doing a nice job. And the coaching staff, I'm sure, has put some quality time in.
Well, they certainly have. And, you know, I was going to say, we'll go to the Torrey Hunter cut here if I have it. We're going to wait on Helmsy, who's multitasking as he answers the phone. Justin Musil calling in. We're going to talk some college playoffs and Big Ten. But let's take that Torrey Hunter cut real quick, Dave. We'd like to hear what he says when all things are clicking.
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. Everybody, you know, is rowing that boat together, man. When all cylinders are clicking, I always say this, you know, when cylinders are clicking, things are well, you know. And that's on any baseball team in the major leagues. All cylinders are clicking, you go out there and you do some great things. We battle at the plate. You know, we're going first to third, coming up with some big hits, you know, when we need them, and playing great defense right now. I mean, this is the best I've seen in a long time. Pitching well, you know.
Your boy Gibby is on the hill today at 110.
He's pitching great. I mean, defensively, this team is playing so superior than their competition, especially in the outfield, which really struggled early in the season, and that they just picked it up 10 notches going forward here. And they're being competitive in their batter's box, Al. I mean, 1 through 9, there's very, very little bad at bats when you watch them play 9 innings. Everybody's really contributing a great deal.
Yes, and what I like is the ball's been hit, being hit all over the field.
Yep.
Guys are definitely staying within their abilities. But I looked at it. I looked this up right before we went on. Both Mauer and Dozier are over .995 fielding percentage, with Pluth at .980. And with Santana getting better, that's awesome. But I think one of the big mixes that's been added, one ingredient, both Hicks and Romero, they're tightening up that outfield defense. Gaps are smaller. They're making plays. And that right side, Dozier's been a one heck of a player here 2 years in a row defensively. I think if he could get that average up and continue what he's doing, he's a potential gold glove guy because he does make that infield very stable.
Al Newman is in his office in Alexandria as he prepares for a game in the Northwoods League. Gene Larkin in studio. On the phone now is Justin Musil. He, of course, from Elite Sports Advising. And we're going to talk a little bit of college baseball with Justin. Good morning to you. Almost morning, almost afternoon.
How are you guys doing today?
Awesome. I got to ask you something. I got to ask all you guys something. On CBSSports.com, there's a 300-pounder on the hill. His name is Ben Anchef. He pitches for St. Thomas out of Florida. He's in the NAIA World Series. He stands 6 feet two, 300 pounds. He's got one of those old-school pullover jerseys, no button-downs. And you know, I am not a thin guy by any stretch of imagination, but it is not doing him any favors.
Well, he's definitely lowering the mound.
Well, I mean, it's... Dave, can you pull this up? Can you start the video on that monitor, please, and then swing it around here? So there's a monitor of him throwing. Justin, in your travels, have you seen any 300-pound pitchers not named C.C. Sabathia?
No, I haven't, Pete.
Oh, I lost
that. That is a unique thing for sure, man.
Get it back. Okay, here we go. I want you to see this guy, Gene. We're watching it on monitor right now. He doesn't look 6'2 with the girthy weight. Look at this. Look at this. This guy is about as wide as a house.
The old bad body team.
Wow, this is incredible. I'm going to try and call the pitch. No, they're showing the batter. I don't want to see him. He's from the stretch. He's got his knees partially bent and a nice slide step, but he can't throw around the gut to get the rhythm.
Does he look at all like Bartolo Colon?
Bartolo Colon looks great compared to this.
He's a triathlete compared to this guy.
Incredible.
He looks like he ate Bartolo Colon.
Look at that. Oh, it's the Michelin man throwing BBs down the middle of the plate. Oh, my word. Okay, let's go on. Justin, how about those Big Ten playoffs? Were you out at Target Field for those?
Yeah. Last week was a great week, man. Great tournament. The Big Ten is obviously rolling right now. And with the NCAA regional starting yesterday at Division I level, the Big Ten, I don't know if you guys know or were keeping track, but they were 5-0 yesterday. So,
surprising?
Not to me. After seeing those guys and seeing a lot of the other teams in action this year, the Big Ten is so good right now. I think it's interesting because I think it's similar to, I think, the Midwest and Minnesota maybe in general as far as the baseball goes, but it's on its way up. And I think coaching is better, facilities are better, their recruitment is better. So I think they're getting better players. I mean, it's just, they're really, really good. I wouldn't be surprised, at all if those guys get through to, you know, three, four of those teams get through to the Super Regionals.
Well, I know I've got how you doing? I've got two guys from Nebraska on my pitching staff, and as you mentioned, they're Minnesota kids. And I've mentioned before on this show how the U misses some kids, or maybe they choose not to go after them. But I've got two pretty good pitchers on my staff here: Ingekin and Mr. Knutson.
Yeah, those guys, you know, it's interesting too, Al. I think it just, what's happened is I think the, you know, as far as the U, I mean, they have an awesome coaching staff and the guys are, you know, unbelievable baseball guys and great baseball minds. I just think what happened in today's world, I think it just, teams are able to travel a little bit more as far as where they're going to get guys. It's opened up doors for kids here. To get access to different schools. And I mean, there's just more people in the mix now. And sure. I think you're just going to lose some of them. I mean, it's just kind of the way it is.
Yep.
So Michigan wins the Big Ten tournament, over a Maryland team. Have the Marylands and the Rutgers and some of these teams, have they helped as far as the depth of the Big Ten conference as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think there's no doubt about it. And that Maryland team, I'm a big fan of that Maryland team. I really like their pitching staff and they can swing it a little bit, play a little bit of defense. That Michigan team is kind of I don't want to say unique, but they just swing. I mean, they got some good arms, but they're just aggressive. Really good athletes that put up a lot of runs. So it's just kind of interesting. But yeah, top to bottom, Pete, adding those teams in has definitely helped.
So from a regional perspective, we've got about another week and a half, 2 weeks of that before we really start whittling it down to Omaha, correct?
Yeah. So yeah, this weekend and then the next weekend, and then and in fact, I'll be down at the College World Series as well. So that'll be coming up on us here pretty quick. But you know, really exciting time, and I think it's the survive and advance, as everyone else knows on the show. You get through to the next day and you just keep playing day at a time and try to not look too much at Omaha. So it's, I know it's tough for the coaches. I talked to a lot of the coaches and, you know, they're just trying to focus, you know, like I said, one game at a time and it's a long stretch. It gets to be a little bit draining, but, you know, Omaha is the goal.
We're speaking with Justin Musil. He's on the On Deck radio program with Gene Larkin in studio, Al Newman in Alexandria preparing for a game, yours truly, Pete Wagner, David Helmer behind the microphone. Justin, have you been to any high school games during the playoffs? And if you have, your opinions on what you're seeing?
Yeah. We've actually been out, you know, full bore, you know, since they started. And this week had guys all over as well. But There's not a lot of surprises right now, Pete.
Come on, you're hurting my feelings, Jess. My Edina boys were eliminated. How is that not a surprise to you, Jess?
A surprise? I mean, I'm wearing an Edina jacket, and I'm not surprised.
You're killing me.
Word. Don't you have to catch the ball to win?
Yeah, I'm with you, Gino. I actually like that team a lot. I think they got a lot of talent. They just, that's a tough section, though.
It is.
Just always tough to get through. I'll be out in, actually, I'm on my way out to Chaska today to watch a couple of really good teams, actually four really good teams battling out today, and see where they're at the end of the day today. But a lot of good playoff baseball come shaking out here, Pete.
Well, and as we say it, I think my boys, the Hopkins Royals, took them down there on a terrific pitching effort. Justin, take care. We'll be
in touch
with you in a couple of weeks.
Yes.
Enjoy your
games.
Al, good luck today.
Yep.
We'll be back on the horn with you next week. Gene and I will be in studio. David Helmer behind the controls. Another fastest hour in baseball. On Deck Radio, I'm Pete Wagner. So long, everybody.